That man with the tattoos!
Mr. Dark? Gasped Will.
Yes, gibbered the boy. He's down that way. Oh, stop him!
Will, his father rose. Take care of Jim. Artificial respiration. All right, boy. The boy trotted off.
This way!
Following, Charles Holloway watched the distraught boy who led him, observed his head, his frame, the way his pelvis hung from his spine. Boy, he said by the shadowed merry-go-round, 20 feet around from where Will bent to Jim. What's your name?
No time, cried the boy. Jed! Quick, quick!
Charles Holloway stopped. Jed, he said. The boy no longer moved, but turned, chafing his elbows. How old are you, Jed?
9, said the boy. My gosh, this is no time. We...
This is a fine time, Jed, said Charles Holloway. Only 9? So young. I was never that young.
Holy cow! Shouted the boy angrily.
Or unholy something, said the man, and reached out. The boy backed away. You're only afraid of one man, Jed. Me.
You?
The boy still backed off.
Cut it out! Why? Why?
Because sometimes good has weapons and evil none. Sometimes tricks fail. Sometimes people can't be picked off, led to deadfalls. No divide and conquer tonight, Jed. Where were you taking me, Jed? To some lion's cage you got fixed and ready? To some sideshow, like the mirrors? To someone like the witch? What? What, Jed? What? Let's just roll up your right shirt sleeve, shall we, Jed? The great moonstone eyes flashed at Charles Holloway. The boy leaped back, but not before the man had leaped with him, seized his arm, grabbed the back of his shirt, and instead of simply rolling up the sleeve as first suggested, tore the entire shirt off the boy's body. Why, yes, Jed, said Charles Holloway, almost quietly, just as I thought.
You!
Yes, Jed, me. But especially you. Look at you. And look he did. For there, on the back of the small boy's hand, on the fingers and up along the wrist, scrambled blue serpents, blue-venomed snake eyes, blue scorpions scuttling about blue shark maws which gaped eternally hungry to feed upon all the freaks crammed and stung-sewn cheek by jowl, skin to skin, flesh to flesh, all up and down the chest, the tiny torso, and tucked in the secret gathering places on this small, small, very small body, this cold and now shocked and trembling body. Why, Jed, that's fine artwork, that is.
You!
The boy struck. Yes, still me. Charles Holloway took the blow in the face and clamped a vise on the boy.
No!
Oh, yes, said Charles Holloway, using just his good right hand, his ruined left hand hanging limp. Yes, Jed. Jump, squirm, go ahead. It was a fine idea. Get me off alone, fix me, then go back and get Will. And when the police come, why, you're just a boy, 9 or 10, and the carnival? Oh, no, it's not yours, doesn't belong to you. Stay here, Jed. Why are you trying to get out from under my arm? The police look, and the owners of the show have vanished. Isn't that it, Jed? A fine escape.
You can't hurt me, the boy shrieked.
Funny, said Charles Holloway. I think I can. He pressed the boy, almost lovingly, close, very close.
Murder! Wailed the boy. Murder!
I'm not going to murder you, Jed, Mr. Dark, whoever, whatever you are. You're going to murder yourself because you can't stand being near people like me. Not this close. Close. Not this long.
Evil!
Groaned the boy, writhing.
You're evil!
Evil? Will's father laughed, which made the boy, wasp-stung and brambled by the sound, jerk all the more violently. Evil? The man's hands were flypaper fastened to the small bones. Strange hearing that from you, Jed. So it must seem. Good to evil seems evil. So I will do only good to you, Jed. I will simply hold you and watch you poison yourself. I will do good to you, Jed, Mr. Dark, Mr. Proprietor, boy, until you tell what's wrong with Jim. Wake him up. Let him free. Give him life.
Can't.
The boy's voice fell down a well inside his body, fading away, away.
Can't.
You mean you won't?
Can't.
All right, boy, all right. Then here, and here, and this, and this. They looked like father and son long apart, passionately met, embraced, yet more embraced, as the man lifted his wounded hand to gently touch the stricken face, as the crowd, the team of illustrations, shivered and flew now this way and that in microscopic forays quickly abandoned. The boy's eyes swiveled wildly, fixed upon the man's mouth. He saw there the strange and somehow lovely smile once flung as beatification to the witch. He gathered the boy somewhat closer and thought, evil has only the power that we give it. I give you nothing. I take back. Starve. 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 The two matchstick lights in the boy's affrighted eyes blew out. The boy and his stricken and bruised conclave of monsters, his felt but half-seen crowd, fell to earth. There should have been a roar, like a mountain slid to ruin. But there was only a rustle, like a Japanese paper lantern dropped in the dust. Chapter 53. Charles Holloway stood for a long while, breathing deep, lungs aching, looking down at the body. The shadows swooned and fluttered in all the canvas alleys where odd assorted sizes of freaks and people, fleshed in their own terrors and sins, held to poles, moaning in disbelief. Somewhere, the skeleton moved out in the light. Somewhere else, the dwarf almost knew who he was and scuttled forth like a crab from a cave to blink and blink again at Will bent working over Jim, at Will's father, bent to exhaustion over the still form of the silent boy, while the merry-go-round, at last, slow, slow, came to a stop, rocking like a ferry-boat in the watery blowing grass. The carnival was a great dark hearth, lit with gathered coals, as shadows came to stare and fire their gaze with the tableau by the carousel. There in the moonlight lay the illustrated boy named Dark. There lay dragons slaughtered, towers ruined, monsters from dim ages toppled into rusted coinage, pterodactyls smashed like biplanes from old and always meaningless wars, crustacea the color of emeralds abandoned on a white sand shore where the tide of life was going out, all the illustrations changing now, shifting, shriveling as the small flesh cooled. There the obscene wink of the navel eye gasped in on itself. There the nipple iris of a trumpeting mastodon went blind and raved at its blindness. Each and every picture remembered from the tall Mr. Dark, now rendered down to miniature canvas, pronged and forked over a boy's tennis racket bones. More freaks, with faces the color of beds where so many had lost the battle of souls, emerged from the shadows to glide in a great and ever more curious carousel motion about Charles Holloway and his dropped burden. Will paused in his desperate push and relaxation, trying to shape Jim back to life, unafraid of the watchers in the dark, no time for that. Even if there were time, these freaks, he sensed, were breathing the night as if they had not been fed on such rare, fine air in years. And as Charles Holloway watched, and the foxfire, lobster-moist, phlegm-trapped eyes watched from distances. The boy who had been Mr. Dark grew yet colder, as death cut the timbers of nightmares, and the calligraphies, the smoky lightnings of sketch that coiled and crouched and soared like terrible banners of a lost war, began to vanish, one by one, from the strewn small body. A score of freaks glanced fearfully round, as if the moon had suddenly filled itself full, and they could see. They chafed their wrists as if chains had fallen from them, chafed their necks as if weights had crumbled from their bowed shoulders. Stumbled forth after long entombments, they blinked swiftly, disbelieving the packet of their misery sprawled near the spent carousel. If they dared, they might have bent to tremble their hands over that suddenly death-sweet mouth, the marbling brow. As it was, they watched, benumbed, as their portrait pictures, the vital stuffs of their mortal greed, rancor, and poisonous guilt, the emerald abstracts of their self-blinded eyes, self-wounded mouths, self-trapped bodies melted one by one from this insignificant mound of snow. There melted the skeleton. There the sidewise, scuttling crayfish dwarf. Now the lava sipper took leave of autumn flesh, followed by the black executioner from London Dock. There, soared off and gone, went the human montgolfier, the balloon man. Avoir du poids, the magnificent, deflated to purest air. There. There fled mobs and bands, as death washed the drawing board clean. Now there lay just a plain dead boy, unbruised by pictures, staring up at the stars with Mr. Dark's empty eyes. In a chorus of release, the strange people in the shadows sighed. Perhaps the calliope gave a last ringmaster's bark. Perhaps thunder turned, sleeping in the clouds. Suddenly, all wheeled about. The freaks stampeded. North, south, east, west. Free of tent, master, dark law. Free above all of each other, they ran like albino pigs, tuskless boars, and stricken sloths before storms. It must have been, it seemed, each yanked a rope, loosed a tent peg, running. For now the sky was shaken with a fatal respiration, the breathing down, the insunk rattle and peal of collapsing darkness as the tents gave way. With hiss of viper, swirl of cobra, the ropes insanely raveled, slithered, snapped, cut grass with frictioned whips. The networks of the vast main freak tent convulsed, parted bones, small from medium and medium from brontosaur magnificent, all swayed with impending fall. The menagerie tent shut up like a dark Spanish fan. Other small tents, caped figures in the meadow, fell down at the wind's command. Then at last, the freak tent, the great melancholy mothering reptile bird, after a moment of indecision, sucked in a Niagara of blizzard air, broke loose 300 hempen snakes, crack-rattled its black side poles so they fell like teeth from a cyclopean jaw, slammed the air with acres of moldered wing as if trying to kite away, but earth-tethered, must succumb to plain and most simple gravity, must be crushed by its own locked bulk. Now this greatest tent, staled out hot raw breaths of earth, confetti that was ancient when the canals of Venice were not yet staked, and wafts of pink cotton candy like tired feather boas. In rushing downfalls, the tent shed skin, grieved, soughed as flesh fell away until at last the tall museum timbers at the spine of the discarded monster dropped with three cannon roars. The calliope simmered, moronic with wind. The train stood, an abandoned toy in a field. The freak oil paintings clapped hands high on the last standing pennant poles, then plummeted to earth. The skeleton, the only strange one left, bent to pick up the body of the porcelain boy who was Mr. Dark. He moved away into the fields. Will, in a swift moment, saw the thin man and his burden go over a hill among all the footprints of the vanished carnival race. Will's face shadowed this way, then that, pulled by the swift concussions, the tumults, the deaths, the fleeing away of souls. Cougar, Dark, Skeleton, Dwarf who was Lightning Rod Salesman, don't run, come back. Miss Foley, where are you? Mr. Crosetti, it's over. Be still, quiet. It's all right. Come back. Come back. But the wind was blowing their footprints out of the grass, and they might run forever now, trying to outflee themselves. So Will turned back astride Jim, and pushed the chest and let go. Pushed and let go. Then, trembling, touched his dear friend's cheek. Jim. But Jim was cold as spaded earth. Chapter 54. Beneath the cold was a fugitive warmness. In the white skin lay some small color. But when Will felt Jim's wrist, there was nothing. And when he put his ear to the chest, there was nothing.
He's dead.
Charles Halloway came to his son and his son's friend and knelt down to touch the quiet throat, the unstirred ribcage. No, puzzled. Not quite.
Dead!
The tears burst from Will's eyes. But then, as swiftly, he felt himself knocked, struck, shaken.
Stop that, cried his father. You want to save him?
It's too late, oh, Dad!
Shut up! Listen.
But Will wept. And again his father hauled off and hit him. Once on the left cheek, once on the right cheek, hard. All the tears in him were knocked flying. There were no more.
Will! His father savagely jabbed a finger at him and at Jim. Damn it, Willie. All this, all these, Mr. Dark and his sort, they like crying. My God, they love tears. Jesus, God, the more you bawl, the more they drink the salt off your chin. Wail and they suck your breath like cats. Get up. Get off your knees, damn it. Jump around. Whoop and holler. You hear? Shout. Will, sing. But most of all, laugh. You got that? Laugh.
I can't. You must.
It's all we got. I know. In the library, the witch ran. My God, how she ran. I shot her dead with it. A single smile, Willie. The night people can't stand it. The sun's there. They hate the sun. We can't take them seriously, Will. But hell. You saw the mirrors. And the mirrors shoved me half in, half out the grave. Showed me all wrinkles and rot. Blackmailed me. Blackmailed Miss Foley, so she joined the Grand March Nowhere. Joined the fools who wanted everything. Idiot thing to want everything. Poor damned fools. So wound up with nothing like the dumb dog who dropped his bone to go after the reflection of the bone in the pond. Will, you saw. Every mirror fell. Like ice in a thaw. With no rock or rifle, no knife, just my teeth, tongue, and lungs, I gunshot those mirrors with pure contempt. Knocked down 10 million scared fools and let the real man get to his feet. Now, on your feet, Will.
But Jim,
Will faltered. Half in, half out, Jim's been that always. Sore tempted. Now he went too far, and maybe he's lost. But he fought to save himself, right? Put his hand out to you to fall free of the machine. So we finish that fight for him. Move! Will sailed up, giddily. Yanked.
Run!
Will sniffed again. Dad slapped his face. Tears flew like meteors.
Hop! Jump! Yell!
He banged Will ahead, shuffled with him, shoved his hand in his pockets, tearing them inside out until he pulled forth a bright object. The harmonica. Dad blew a cord. Will stopped, staring down at Jim.
Dad clouted him on the ear. Run! Don't look!
Will ran a step.
Dad blew another cord, yanked Will's elbow, flung each of his arms. Sing!
What?
God, boy, anything!
The harmonica tried a bad Swanee River.
Dad!
Will shuffled, shaking his head, immensely tired.
Silly!
Sure, we want that. Silly damn fool man, silly harmonica, bad off-key tune.
Dad whooped. He circled like a dancing crane. He was not in the silliness yet. He wanted to crack through. He had to break the moment.
Will? Louder, funnier, as the man said. Oh, hell, don't let them drink your tears and want more. Will? Don't let them take your crying, turn it upside down, and use it for their own smile. I'll be damned if death wears my sadness for glad rags. Don't feed them one damn thing, Willie. Loosen your bones. Breathe. Blow.
He seized Will's hair, shook him.
Nothing funny.
Sure there is. Me, you, Jim, all of us, the whole shooting works. Look.
And Charles Holloway pulled faces, popped his eyes, mashed his nose, winked, cavorted like chimpanzee ape, waltzed with the wind, tap-danced the dust, threw back his head to bay at the moon, dragging Will with him.
That's funny, goddammit. Bend, 2, 3, Will, soft shoe, way down upon the Swanee River. What's next, Will? Far, far away. Will, you god-awful voice, damn girl soprano, sparrow in a tin can. Jump, boy!
Will went up, came down, cheeks hotter, a wincing like lemons in his throat. He felt balloons grow in his chest.
Dad sucked the silver harmonica.
That's where the old folks,
Will spoke.
Stay,
bellowed his father. Shuffle, tap, bounce, jog.
Where was Jim? Jim was forgotten.
Dad jabbed his ribs, tickling.
The cap down lady, sing this song. Do-da, yelled Will. Do-da, he sang it now with a tune.
The balloon grew. His throat tickled.
Camptown racetrack, 5 miles long. Oh, do-da-day.
Man and boy did a minuet.
And in mid-step,
it happened. Will felt the balloon grow huge within him. He smiled.
What?
Dad was surprised by those teeth.
Will snorted.
Will giggled.
What say? Asked Dad.
The force of the exploding warm balloon alone shoved Will's teeth apart, kicked his head back.
Dad! Dad!
He bounded. He grabbed his dad's hand. He raced crazily, hollering, quacking like a duck, clucking like a chicken. His palms hit his throbbing knees. Dust flew off his soles.
Oh, Susanna!
Oh, don't you cry
for me!
For I come from Alabama with my banjo on my together knee.
The harmonica knocked teeth, wheezing.
Dad hocked forth great chords of squeeze-eyed hilarity, turning in a circle, jumping up to kick his heels.
Huh!
They collided, half-collapsed, knocked elbows, cracked heads, which blew the air out faster.
Huh! Oh, God! Huh! Oh, God, Will, ha, weak, ha.
In the middle of wild laughter, a sneeze. They spun. They stared. Who lay there on the moonlit earth? Jim?
Jim Nightshade? Had he stirred? Was his mouth wider, his eyelids quivering? Were his cheeks pinker?
Don't look. Dad swung Will handily round in a further reel. They do-si-do'd, hands extended, the harmonica seeping and guzzling raw tunes from a father who storked his legs and turkeyed his arms. They hopped Jim one way, hopped back as if he were but a lumpstone on the grass. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah.
Someone's in the kitchen.
I know!
Jim's tongue slid out on his lips. No one saw this. Or if they saw, ignored it, fearing it might pass. Jim did the final things himself. His eyes opened. He watched the dancing fools. He could not believe. He had been off on a journey of years. Now returned, no one said hi. All jigged Sambo style. Tears might have jumped to his eyes. But before they could start, Jim's mouth curved. He gave up a ghost of laughter. For after all, there indeed was silly Will and his silly old janitor dad racing like gorillas knuckle-dusting the meadows, their faces a puzzlement. They toppled above him, clapped hands, wiggled ears, bent to wash him all over with their now bright, full-river flowing laughter that could not be stopped if the sky fell or the earth rent open, to blend their good mirth with his, to fuse light and set him off in a detonation which could not stop exploding from ladyfingers to 4 inches to doomsday cannon crackers of delight. And looking down, jolt dancing his bones loose and delicious, Will thought, Jim don't remember he was dead, so we won't tell. Not now. Some day, sure, but not. Do-da, do-da. They didn't even say hello, Jim, or join the dance. They just put out hands, as if he had fallen from their swung pandemonium commotion and needed a boost back into the swarm. They yanked Jim. Jim flew. Jim came down dancing. And Will knew, hand in hand, hot palm to palm, they had truly yelled, sung, gladly shouted the live blood back. They had slung Jim like the newborn, knocked his lungs, slapped his back, shocked joyous breath to where it made room. Then Dad bent, and Will leaped over him, and Will bent, and Dad jumped over him, and they both waited, crouched in a line, wheezing songs, deliciously tired, while Jim swallowed spit and ran full tilt. He got half over Dad when they all fell, rolled in the grass, all hoot owl and donkey, all brass and cymbal, as it must have been the first year of creation, and joy not yet thrown from the garden. Until at last they drew up their feet, socked each other's shoulders, embraced knees tight, rocking, and looking with swift, bright happiness at each other, growing wine-drunkenly quiet. And when they were done smiling at each other's faces, as at burning torches, they looked away across the field, and the black tent poles lay in elephant boneyards, with the dead tents blowing away like the petals of a great black rose. The only 3 people in a sleeping world, a rare trio of tomcats, they basked in the moon. "What happened?" asked Jim at last. "What didn't?" cried Dad. And they laughed again, when suddenly Will grabbed Jim, held him tight, and wept. "Hey," Jim said, over and over, quietly. "Hey. Hey." "Oh, Jim, Jim," Will said. "We'll be pals forever." "Sure. Hey, sure." Jim was very quiet now. "It's all right," said Dad. "Have a small cry. We're out of the woods. Then we'll laugh some more going home." Will let Jim go. They got to their feet and stood looking at each other. Will examined his father with fierce pride. "Oh, Dad. Dad, you did it. You did it." "No, we did it together. But without you, it'd all be over." "Oh, Dad, I never knew you. I sure know you now." "Do you, Will?" "Darn right." Each, to the other, shimmered in bright halos of wet light. "Why then, hello. Reply, son, and curtsy." Dad held out his hand. Will shook it. Both laughed and wiped their eyes.
then looked quickly at the footprints scattered in the dew over the hills.
Dad, will they ever come back?
No, and yes. Dad tucked away his harmonica. No, not them, but yes, other people like them. Not in a carnival. God knows what shape they'll come in next. But sunrise, noon, or at the latest, sunset tomorrow, they'll show. They're on the road.
Oh, no, said Will.
Oh, yes, said Dad. We got to watch out the rest of our lives. The fight's just begun. They moved around the carousel slowly.
What will they look like? How will we know them?
Why, said Dad quietly, maybe they're already here. Both boys looked around swiftly. But there was only the meadow, the machine, and themselves. Will looked at Jim, at his father, and then down at his own body and hands. He glanced up at Dad. Dad nodded, once, gravely, and then nodded at the carousel, and stepped up on it, and touched the brass pole. Will stepped up beside him. Jim stepped up beside Will. Jim stroked a horse's mane. Will patted a horse's shoulders. The great machine softly tilted in the tides of night.
Just three times around ahead, thought Will. Hey.
Just four times around ahead, thought Jim.
Boy.
Just 10 times around back, thought Charles Holloway.
Lord.
Each read the thoughts in the other's eyes.
How easy, thought Will.
Just this once, thought Jim. But then, thought Charles Holloway, once you start, you'd always come back. One more ride, and one more ride, and after a while, you'd offer rides to friends, and more friends, until finally... The thought hit them all in the same quiet moment. Finally, you wind up owner of the carousel, keeper of the freaks, proprietor for some small part of eternity of the traveling dark carnival shows.
Maybe, said their eyes, they're already here.
Charles Holloway stepped back into the machinery of the merry-go-round, found a wrench, and knocked the flywheels and cogs to pieces. Then he took the boys out and he hit the control box one or two times until it broke and scattered fitful lightnings. Maybe this isn't necessary, said Charles Holloway. Maybe it wouldn't run anyway without the freaks to give it power, but... He hit the box a last time and threw down the wrench. It's late. Must be midnight straight up. Obediently, the City Hall clock, the Baptist Church clock, the Methodist, the Episcopalian, the Catholic Church, all the clocks struck 12. The wind was seeded with time. Last one to the railroad semaphore at Green Crossing is an old lady. The boys fired themselves off like pistols. The father hesitated only a moment. He felt the vague pain in his chest. If I run, he thought, what will happen?
Is death important?
No. Everything that happens before death is what counts. And we've done fine tonight. Even death can't spoil it. So there went the boys. And why not follow? He did just that. And, Lord, it was fine, printing their life in the dew on the cool fields that new dark, suddenly like Christmas morning. The boys ran as tandem ponies, knowing that someday one would touch base first and the other second or not at all, but now this first minute of the new morning was not the minute or the day or morning of ultimate loss. Now was not the time to study faces to see if one was older and the other too much younger. Today was just another day in October, in a year suddenly better than anyone supposed it could ever be just a short hour ago, with the moon and the stars moving in a grand rotation toward inevitable dawn, and them loping, and the last of this night's weeping done, and Will laughing and singing and Jim giving answer line by line as they breasted the waves of dry stubble toward a town where they might live another few years across from each other. And behind them jogged a middle-aged man with his own now solemn, now amiable thoughts. Perhaps the boys slowed. They never knew. Perhaps Charles Holloway quickened his pace. He could not say. But, running even with the boys, the middle-aged man reached out. Will slapped. Jim slapped. Dad slapped the semaphore signal base at the same instant. Exultant, they banged a trio of shouts down the wind. Then, as the moon watched, the three of them together left the wilderness behind and walked into the town. This concludes the reading of Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury.